Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. It is a delight to have you with us on this Thursday morning, the 29th of August. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's Ray Graff is here, and back with us this week, and we are thrilled, Rosemary Armeo, University of Albany journalism professor, investigative reporter, and we'll be back in the Media Project as well this week. So
that's right, yeah. General conversationalist this week.
Excellent.
Somebody said that you and I had a fight yesterday, did we?
Well, we didn't. I thought it was just your usual, you know, crap that you give to everyone.
Ouch. I love it. Wow.
And unfortunately, it was at the end of the show, so we couldn't keep on going. No, yeah. We like having discussions, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. It was about Fidel and commonalities or differences between, get this, Fidel Castro and Martin Luther King. Imagine having a fight about that.
The point you sort of made, and I sort of said, absolutely not.
Right, right. But can we go into this? Have you lost control of the show?
That's it, the show's over already.
It seems as, I don't know that I ever had control, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I was struck, of course, it's the 50th anniversary of the famous I Have a Dream speech, and I'm struck by how similar revolutionaries are. And Fidel Castro promoted some of the same goals for his country that Martin Luther King would have liked to see in the United States. And then Alan switched it to how violent and how, you know, what a killer
Castro
has been. And yet I also see violence as part of it, too. We don't know what would have happened with Martin Luther King because of his assassination. Would he have become more violent? Would nonviolence
absolutely
have been?
Absolutely not.
And we
more
don't
like
know.
Mandela.
Wait, yeah. Let me. And then, because people will think we're fighting if you cut me off.
Yeah.
So watch
that's
this.
True.
And vice versa.
Yes.
It's quite nice.
And on the other hand, Fidel Castro did kill many of his enemies. Many, many. And it's horrible. But did he do that because the CIA was like, you know, kind of helping his enemies to try to assassinate him? We
what
don't
year
know what
was that?
Would have happened. Well, he came into power in 59. So throughout the 60s, this was all happening.
It's interesting because
70s.
Yeah, and
80s.
Into the 70s. Yeah, Bay of Pigs was in the 60s. So, yeah. So, I mean, Fidel Castro, you know,
would you
was
like
he
a calculator?
I'm trying to figure out how old I was. I'm 72 now.
Right.
Does that help you? How old was I when Fidel came into, because I remember as a fairly young person.
You're about 19, right?
By the way, you're 71.
No, I'm 72.
You are 72?
Yeah.
I thought you were 72.
No.
71.
No, I'm 72.
All right.
When you get that old a couple years, it doesn't make any difference.
Well, he keeps upping it. See, he keeps upping it.
No, no, I do go. About the middle of the year, I start to say I'm 73.
Okay, all right.
To prepare for it.
All right, I lost. I lost
what
it was.
So what does it matter how old you were when Fidel came into power?
Because if you watch the NBC Evening News and you see pictures of Castro putting, blindfolds, not Castro himself, but his troops, putting blindfolds on people, putting them next to a thing, and killing them, shooting them, boy, it lives with you forever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not defending this. I mean, we could do the same with Tito, who held Yugoslavia together for 40 years, and he killed like a quarter of a million people to make it happen. And now people there say, oh, if only Tito were back, things would be better. So, no, I don't condone violence at all, but there was a reason for it, and the United States was behind it. We turned his counter-revolutionaries into would-be assassins.
Of that, there is no question. We know that.
We were at the end, as you two were having your conversation / fight, Ray and I, as we were leaving the studio, looked at each other and said, well, the time was on our side on that one. So I'm glad to know we went right back into it on the next day. That's good. Yeah. Well, while we're having this discussion, let us talk about what happened yesterday as far as the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. A very, very impressive event took place on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Of course, the scene 50 years ago of the original march. And it was, I have to say, personally, we aired it live from 2 to 4. I have to say I was just captivated by the entire thing. I could not believe anything being more moving and special. And I know there are a lot of, and we can get into this, a lot of questions that the president didn't say enough. He didn't put an agenda forward. He had this opportunity that he squandered. To me, everything was just right by everyone, but that's my thought. What'd you think?
I can't add to that. I agree with you. I thought it was well done, well staged, important for the country to see. I hope a lot of people watched it and felt the same way.
You know, Barack Obama is, of course, the first African-American president. And he has talked in the past about post-racial, I'm here for everybody. But right. Every once in a while, there is a poignant moment when you see what his connections are mm-hmm. to the African American community and to his family, and to and I think yesterday was one of those days when it really was very poignant and very very special.
Which it seems that often
this is why I still like you. You know that was pretty that was pretty moving. That's true.
I wrote a letter for your tenure.
Thank you very much.
And you got it, right?
I hope so.
We don't know.
Not
all right, we're still
yet.
All right. I'll open up that can of worms. So, when we, you know, I think you're absolutely right, Alan. And what I find curious is that you know he doesn't play that card a lot. You know, it is something that he uses and talks about very rarely.
Yes.
And we saw it after we saw it in the echoes of Trayvon Martin.
That's right.
We saw it at different times in the campaign, but there are not.
Well, he knows it. I mean, if he mentioned this in every speech, it wouldn't have nearly the power.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was somewhat taken aback. I will be honest with the coverage. And unfortunately, I will and I tried to look this up this morning, and I could not find the man's name. The NPR coverage that we did, we in running it, mm-hmm. there was a gentleman who was offering commentary, and I don't know who he was, mm-hmm. But there was also he was I believe an academic, and then there was Linda Wertheimer who had covered the original mm-hmm. March on Washington, and both were very critical of the president. I say very. They were critical of the president for not using it as a bully pulpit to say, okay, we have all of these problems and this is the time where I'm going to move forward. Much like the March on Washington where you're talking about a civil rights amendment, that yes, this was the time to say, this is legislation that I have to fix all of the things that we were talking about today.
Hmm.
And to me, that wasn't the place.
Yeah, I'm really glad he didn't do that. Mm. You know, that's
because it politicizes it.
One wonders whether, and this really bothers me, whether NPR is playing, pardon me, catch up ball with, you know, they're always being criticized by the right wing. The Republicans are always trying to take their money away and the rest of it. So it's almost as if they have to put their critical, you know, mind to saying something that they can say, see here, this is the balance, bothers me.
This is anecdotal, but at the end of President Obama's speech, I was moved. I was very, very moved. Mm-hmm. And then to immediately have Linda Wertheimer come on and say, well, we learned one thing, he's no Martin Luther King.
Oh.
And I thought, well, I don't. He's not trying to be. But if you look at that speech in the context of 50 years later, as the first African American president celebrating the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, looking down at a crowd of thousands, to me that's pretty impressive.
Me too. And one picture worth a thousand words. The picture of him hugging Congressman Lewis.
Who also gave a beautiful speech.
He did, and he was on with you yesterday.
He was, mm-hmm.
And he's been very generous with his mm-hmm. with his time, and you're really, really great. So I'm with you, Joe, 100%. I think you're absolutely right.
So when you have something like this, this struck me too, and we can use this as a way of morphing into the next topic. But it did seem as we were talking about. Peace, and we were talking about all that was going on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial yesterday, and a celebratory moment. There, of course, in the background is this. Whispers of war and the drumbeat, and wondering at what point. The rockets are going to start to fly, mm-hmm. which now seems somewhat inevitable.
Well, I thought so yesterday. I thought there was no doubt, and probably right, still right. But when you see that the House of Commons did something in England,
yes,
very rare,
yes,
they actually rebelled against their leadership. The Conservative Party rebelled against his leadership and said, we don't want to do this. And he had to
And they
the
didn't
vote.
Even do that. They said, mm-hmm, we want to see more proof.
Yeah.
We want to talk about it a little bit more. What, mm-hmm, is the rush to go to war? Same thing that happened with Iraq. You know,
yeah,
why couldn't we send,
right,
in the UN inspectors and hear their report? Is it, does it make a big difference if you attack this week or 2 weeks from now?
Yeah.
Certainly not if it's just a punishment.
Which is what everyone is saying.
Right. So it could be now until Christmas.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and then...
Don't forget, after 9/11, how long was it before we made that wonderful move to attack Afghanistan? It was not the next week.
Well, that was a big operation.
It was a big operation, right. But isn't this as well?
Not really.
Hopefully all military operations
we're
are
comparing
big
this to
I'm
the possible
still,
start
I'm
of World War III.
I'm still furious with the POST, which is particularly despicable
are,
this
yeah,
morning.
Yeah.
Literally, it's Joseph Pulitzer. You know, it's yellow journalism. It's trying to get us into a war. You know, stop stalling. Get going. Move it. You know,
stop.
Terrible.
Yeah, stop dawdling.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're going to dawdle over anything, it ought to be going to war.
And lives.
Something tells me the president's probably not turning to the Post for his security advice.
Well... I'm not a big fan, as you know, of Rupert Murdoch or his miserable product.
Prime Minister David Cameron of Britain, who runs a coalition government, is facing political difficulties from legislators mindful of the experience in Iraq when assurances from Prime Minister Tony Blair and President George W. Bush that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction proved inaccurate and a false pretext for war.
So now you have both the progressive wing, who under Tony Blair, you know, where they were, and doing this war and feeling suckered and now saying, no, we're not going to do it, the Labor Party. And now you have the conservatives saying the same thing. Fascinating. And that is something you don't see in Parliament that much.
And you have U.S. congressmen similarly saying the president ought to come and talk to us about this. Why isn't he consulting with us? This would be interesting.
Well, yes and no. You get the Republican guys who are always trying to bring down Obama on any pretext, and they certainly are saying that. We also, as you point out, seeing Democratic people saying, wait a second here, this is not a good idea.
And again, is there any harm in going in and having the president and Congress talk about this? I'd like to hear that debate before we do anything.
I was wondering, I was thinking about that this morning as we were, because BBC had offered that we could run some of the debate, and I thought, well, why aren't we having that debate? why isn't that being it? Why isn't
that's,
that a
that's
discussion
That's a really
here?
Good point, yeah.
You know, the one strategic or tactical reason to move quickly is they've all but said, you know, we're going to get your artillery, we're going to get your anti-aircraft, we're going to do this, get these of your assets. So in the delay, and I'm only saying that this is the only possible advantage to moving mm-hmm. fast, they harden those assets. They move them, they hide them, they protect them. I mean, those are the only military objective I could see that to moving fast.
With the risk of repeating myself from previous days.
I see.
If Obama is saying, we are not, this is not regime change, and we are not trying to help one side or the other.
Which is what he's saying.
That's right. But if you then take out their assets, you certainly are helping the other side. I don't know that we want to help the other side.
Again, as you know, I'm fascinated. We've already had this discussion about Cuba at the moment as I'm reading books about it. And
where Castro put those guys up against the tree?
Yeah, that guy. And, you know, once again, I look at it's not the American military that's the problem. The debate seems to be whether we should use them as the policemen of the world. The problem seems to be American diplomacy. We messed up Cuba so badly. 50 years later,
right,
we're still not talking to them. What are we doing with Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran? That gives you any hope that we can deliver a punishing military blow and then things will be fixed, that we'll move in with the diplomats and say, okay, now let's sit down and talk about what we can do here. That's what gives me pause. Not what we're doing with the military so much as there's no follow-up with the State Department.
Mm.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap up our conversation on this subject, and then we'll have a news break, find out the latest, and we'll be back with many more topics as well. As always, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries. AdamsFarms.com. Williams College Museum of Art, offering Art and Aperitif al Fresco, featuring a behind-the-scenes look at prints in the museum's collection, today at 4 and 6 p.m., wcma.williams.edu. And Mid-Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union, featuring mortgages, home equity loans, and first-time homebuyer programs, equal housing lender, mhvfcu.com.
That during the panel we have debates within debates.
Yes.
That's great.
Uh-huh. That'll be the
that.
Fun Drive premium. It'll be
what they really fight about.
what they were talking about off mic. we were discussing some of the issues regarding the celebration yesterday for Martin Luther King and the coverage of that. I do, before we go, and we only have about 3 minutes before we go back to break. Do you think now, because yesterday it seemed, and we mentioned this, it seemed like we were, you know, we expected the missiles to fly at any moment, and now it seems with Britain taking, they put us now in a position to almost have the world take a break on this, mm-hmm. and say, okay, let's wait till the UN report.
Mm-hmm.
Does it seem to be the way we're thinking now?
The president said yesterday that he hadn't yet decided what to do, so that seemed to me that he was backing down.
Yep. And didn't the Times say
delaying?
That, and didn't the Times say editorially that the president hadn't made the case yet?
Right, and I think that's great. More time, the more time, the better.
And so, how do you make the case then, Alan? I mean, what's...
Well, look, we've been having, what are we, four relative schnooks in the great pile of history sitting around talking about this. And we,
in the ranks of schnookery.
Yeah, and we have, you know, tried to make the case one way or the other to try to analyze it to see whether this whole thing makes sense. And I certainly don't think so. And we've had that discussion for the last couple of days. And the Times had the same discussion. And I'm sure they're having the same discussion in the Oval Office. In other words, they haven't yet figured out what the rationale for doing it is.
And this is very different, of course, from just 2 or 3 days ago when both John Kerry and Joe Biden gave very strident remarks that seemed like it was, you know, inevitable.
It certainly seemed that way, but it didn't compute with me, for whatever it was worth, and I've been saying that. I just don't understand why we're doing this now, and who would we have to have with us in order to do it right?
I found myself listening to Ted Cruz, our favorite Tea Party guy, on radio, and he was saying, I want to hear from the president. Of course, he did it in really disrespectful language, but he goes, I would like to hear from the president what the rationale is, what's our proof that this is needed, and what happens after. And I have to say, that's pretty reasonable.
Well, he's not a reasonable man.
He doesn't present what he says
in a reasonable way.
Right, but in this
and
case,
his voice is enough to send you right into outer space.
with that, we're going to take a quick break and hear the latest from NPR. When we come back, we'll continue with other stories of the day. Roundtable at WAMC, if you would like to join us also through Twitter and Facebook, we would love to hear from you. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes.
One of the things that we're allowed to do during the break is do our homework and look up some things that we bring up in the conversation. Ray had mentioned earlier that there was a African-American Republican senator who was not invited to the MLK event yesterday, the 50th anniversary March on Washington event. The nation's only African-American senator who is Republican, Tim Scott of South Carolina, is currently the only black senator and is one of only eight African Americans to ever serve in the U.S. Senate. He was not invited to speak at the event, according to his press secretary, Greg Blair. He said that today's anniversary should simply serve as an opportunity to reflect upon how their actions moved our country forward in a remarkable way. Blair would not say if Scott would have accepted an invitation to speak, nor if he was disappointed at the lack of an invitation. We did get a letter from a listener who said that it is that they came in on our conversation. Let me bring that up real quick here. Sometimes there aren't enough
I came
windows.
To the program. Can I read it?
Yes, please do. Thank you. I do have it. Great.
I came to the program just a few minutes ago, and perhaps you addressed this question. Perhaps it isn't true. As I only read in it on Facebook, but it is it so that a number of Republicans were invited to be part of the event and turned this down?
And I know that there were a number of I do know that there were a number of Republicans that were invited to the event. As for the reason, I know, of course, we mentioned the obvious one, which was President George W. Bush was invited because of his recent heart surgery, was not able to travel and make the event, which they knew about in advance.
Yeah.
So I know that was the big one. But again, I also know that the I do know that the committee did come under fire for those. And here again, you're making a difference of who was invited versus who was asked to speak at the event. With that said, let's move on to some other issues and some things that are going on the news besides Syria and what happened yesterday on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. That is the Fort Hood sentence that came down yesterday. This is really it's just a sad case. A military jury on Wednesday recommended the death penalty for convicted Fort Hood shooter Nadal Hassan for the 2009 massacre on post that left 13 people dead and 32 others wounded. The 13-member panel spent less than 2 hours deliberating privately, and the president or forewoman announced the finding in open court with a clear voice that Hassan be put to death. The convicted killer said nothing as the decision was announced and had appeared emotionless earlier in the morning when dramatic closing arguments in the sentencing phase were held without his participation.
Ray, what do you think? I'm not talking until Ray speaks. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I'm
really
with
quiet.
You.
What's
I'm
the
with
question?
You.
What do you want me to
react?
About?
React.
To what? To the death sentence or that he had no reaction?
To the death sentence.
He wanted it. He got it. He wanted his martyrdom. He got it. It's exactly what he asked for.
I think.
And now look at Rosemary.
I think he's mentally ill. He didn't defend himself. He did not do. He did not partake of any of the rights that we give people in trials. And now he's being put to death.
No, no.
He is. He's being executed.
He may be executed.
Okay. Four years at least.
Yeah.
Executed for 4 years?
That's what it said in the paper yesterday. After 4 years in the appeals. Even if he doesn't appeal, he gets 4 years of mandatory appeals.
Well, good. I mean, I'm glad we're going to give him at least those protections of our court system.
Well,
I think he's mentally ill, and I think that handling it as a case of that would have been better for the country, because we just see him now as another Muslim who went crazy and killed Americans.
Well, see, I'm appalled by the guy, but I can tell you this: when you look at somebody like this, or somebody who gets on an airplane and kills all of those wonderful people, or all the people in the Twin Towers, or all the rest of it, and we say that they're mentally ill, you know, I mean, it's an interesting concept, because they don't think they're mentally ill. They think they're fighting for their jihadist principles, and they think they're fighting because Americans have exploited the people of Afghanistan, and they're willing to die for it. So what's the difference between this major despicable as he is, and he is, and the despicable people on those airplanes who are also doing it, they are convinced in their own mind that God is on their side, that they will have martyrdom, and that that's why they're doing it. I don't know that you can reduce it to mental illness any more than you can say that anybody who gets into a war on this side is mentally ill.
Well, I do think that there is a difference. The killers at 9/11 were jihadists and professional jihadists, if you will. This guy was in the army. He was integrated. It's more like the marathon bombers in Boston, who were on the surface immigrants who were integrated and taking advantage of the United States, and they turned. And I think it's too easy to just say, "Oh, they want it. Let's kill them." I really think we're missing opportunities to figure out what's going on.
Well, you know, Mario Cuomo used to say, when we would talk about the death penalty,
Mm-hmm.
He would say, you know, what's better, to die or to be sitting in a cell, let out 1 hour a day, and the only sound you hear is the toilet being lifted up and down and flushed. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, well,
that
I mean, that's a difference in point of view, though. If it were I and that were my choice, yeah, kill me, that's fine. But what we're really talking about is what the state should do, and should the state be killing anybody?
Well, no, that military, is right? This is military.
Military.
Same. Okay, well, it's a government institution.
The last military execution was in 1961.
Yeah.
Well, when I hear that, and then, oh, boy. When I hear that, and then I think of all of the people who had family, and friends, and children wiped out there. I'm concerned about that.
Well, that's revenge. I mean, I'm not going to condone what he did. That's because I'm saying don't kill him doesn't mean I say, oh, what he did is just fine. That's the same. And I also feel for all the families. But are they really served at all by having the U.S. government murder someone, kill somebody?
Well, murder and kill are two different words.
Okay, I know. That's why I changed it, because I didn't want you to use the connotation of the word. But that's what's happening.
You know, I'm not a fan of the death penalty. There's no question.
Yeah,
but
I'm not.
But on the other hand, you know, there are encumbrances on what we do as a society and what those people who are doing those things to us are doing, which is one of the reasons when we walked in there and, you know, this will create chaos, I'm sure. But it was quite clear that we, Osama was executed when we walked in there. There will be many people who say that was the right thing to do. You didn't make him into a hero. You didn't make him into a martyr. We were careful to dump his body in the ocean and to do all that. But I believe what the orders were, you know, this guy's been found guilty, kill him. Because I don't think he was the threat, at least from what I was watching, that has been claimed. Am I wrong about that?
I'm not sure that I see the connection between killing Osama and executing the Fort Hood
no,
killer.
No, the question is, but, you say you're against.
Yeah, I'm.
You're against execution. The question is.
Oh, if you want to talk about Osama's death, we invaded an ally and killed somebody and attacked a house and killed someone. No, I thought it was horrible behavior.
Did he deserve the killing?
I don't know. A jury decides that. We didn't have a jury, even a military jury. Not up to me. That's the U.S. system.
There is there's an interesting item on CNN. Ronald Gray raped and battered at least 7 women. He killed 4. He left the others for dead. The bodies dumped around Fort Bragg and the neighboring city of Fayetteville, North Carolina, between 1986 and 1987. He was caught. Just as in the civilian system, he was tried. He was found guilty by a jury of his peers, just as in the civilian system. And a death sentence was passed, just as would have been possible in a civilian court for such a heinous crime. But when it comes to staying alive, history is on Gray's side. The U.S. military has not executed one of its own since 1961, as I mentioned. The former soldier came close to being put to death in 2008 when then-President George W. Bush signed a warrant authorizing Gray's execution, a requirement for capital punishment in the military, which would have to be the case by President Obama in the Fort Hood situation. A federal court gave Gray a last-minute temporary stay, and today he, along with 4 other servicemen, remain on military's death row at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas. So the question, I think, and this was an issue certainly when even New York State was debating the death penalty, if you're going to have it, I mean, it's one thing to pass it and have the debate of passing it and then not using it. I guess I don't understand, you know, if you're going to say, okay, here's the death penalty, and but you're never actually going to implement it, then what's
the purpose? The question then, Joe, not taking any sides on that debate, is whether it's a deterrent or not. In other words, you pass it, and is it a deterrent?
Brilliant. You're going where I wanted to go, and that is...
And you mirrored his brilliance.
Exactly. And that gets to what Rosemary said earlier.
Is also about brilliant.
This being revenge. And so deterrent doesn't work with a jihadist. Right. We're going to kill you.
Right.
That's the goal, man.
Right. Well, you said this from the very beginning. He got what he wanted.
Yeah.
He got what he said he wanted.
Waha. Again, now near brilliance. Continue.
No, I mean, we can only say what he said. We can't say what he was thinking. There may have been, I have to be killed because it will assure my martyrdom. And everybody says, well, that's what he said, so that's what he meant. Or it may have been, if I say that, then they're not going to give it to me when I'm...
Psychologist, after all. Yes.
Psychiatrist.
I have no problem with the death penalty that's on the books for use in case there is some case that I cannot at this moment think of that I want to use it on and not use it all the time. I mean, that's like saying we should give a gold star to Texas because they have a death penalty and, wow, they use it all the time. Good for you. You're making sure your law gets used. That's silly. What's wrong with having a death penalty on the books, but you use it very rarely, which is only, I think,
yeah, but if you're
going to
convict people and you are sentenced to death, but then you do not actually follow through with that.
Well, you're not following it through. It's not they're sitting there. They're going through appeals, and don't you think there should be lots and lots of years of appeals if you're going to take away someone's life? That's the ultimate punishment.
I agree with that, but in most of these cases, they're just sitting there. There are no appeals pending.
Good. That's life in prison, which is as you've said, punishment enough. Why does the state need more?
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back and talk about other issues. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from New England Auctions, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For 40 years, an international auction gallery offering fine art, books, maps, and antiques. 413-665-3253 for gallery and auction information. Catskill Hudson Bank, based in Kingston and specializing in commercial loans for local businesses and organizations. 12 branches in the Hudson Valley and Catskills, member FDIC, equal housing lender. CatskillHudsonBank.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, open at their new location, 100 Watervliet Avenue, Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, and more. HonestWeight.coop.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Rosemary Romeo, Ray Graff, and Alan Chartoff.
And along with us also is Jill, who said that there are two reasons why I'm opposed.
I was just about to read that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's Jill. Okay. Go ahead.
Why I'm opposed to executing the major. One, I am dead set against the death penalty, but regardless of that, two, I don't want this guy to be a martyr. He wants to die. A better punishment would be life without parole. Not giving him what he wants would be better justice.
We also got a letter from someone who says, doesn't Hassan believe that he dies and is rewarded for a sacrifice? Isn't that part of the to-the-letter teachings of his faith for some Muslims? So bringing up many of the issues that we talked about just a moment ago. Any more on that? Or you want to move on? Everybody all in on that?
Depends on what we're moving to.
Well, in and all done.
All right. Let's talk about in our final minutes here, an interesting story that was in the New York Times in the business section yesterday, or today rather. I apologize. Beneath the spreading, where is it? Ah, yes. Across the country, a growing number of single-family rentals provide an option for many who lost their homes in the housing crash through foreclosure, and for those who cannot obtain a mortgage under today's tougher credit conditions. But the decline in home ownership is also changing many neighborhoods in profound ways, including reduced home values, lower voter turnout and political influence, less social stability, and higher crime. And it is the article goes on to say that homeowners are getting very upset of what the renters are doing to their fabric of their neighborhood,
right.
And there is kind of this home ownership versus rental, tension, let's mm-hmm. say, not to the people, but to the idea, and that is playing itself out throughout this country. And I think it's an interesting thing of whether we talk about Memphis, Tennessee, or we talk about Iowa, or we talk about North Carolina or Colorado, this is an issue that is taking place between renters and buyers, and what does it do to our communities? What does it do to the fabric of our towns? And but meanwhile, you say, okay, people can get an affordable wage to afford a mortgage to buy a house, and what are you going to do?
Right.
Be mean renting, to them for the rest of their life?
Renting has become more common, and that's sure. an axiom. You want someone to own the house across from you, not to rent it, because they're going to care about it more. It's their investment. But it's a fascinating story. I hope listeners who are hearing this will look it up. It's really interesting.
I have a very good friend who has a co-op in New York City. And most of these co-ops have rules mm-hmm. that, you can only rent under very strict circumstances. And
like a sublet we're talking
yeah,
about?
A sublet.
In a co-op you own?
You own a share in the building.
I see.
It's not like a condo where you own the place, you
right.
own a share in the building. So the board is able to pass some good laws and some ludicrous laws. But, a lot of people need a place to rent to go to, and the idea that we are now setting up this we-they sort of situation is, I think, horrible, although I can't deny.
No, I think the we-they thing is real, and it's been there. It far predates this
yes.
idea of foreclosure, so more people are renting, or the idea that we have so burdened our kids coming out of college with loans to pay back that they can't buy houses. Of course they have to rent. But what really is the problem, to my mind, is that community action doesn't work anymore, or it's much more difficult to make it work.
In what way?
In my community, for example, where I live, it's all ownership, but that the houses are occupied by owners, and yet it's dirty. There's litter everywhere. There's the stewards up the street. They don't take responsibility for that. It's people who shop there. So how do you clean up the streets? It used to be you'd put out a poster, you'd organize a campaign. Now people are too busy. I can't get people to join our library group, which sells books and helps our local library, even though it's good for the whole community. So the real problem is that we don't just have renters why should they put money into a house? They don't own it. Go after the owners of the house if you want the houses to look better. But we can't get them to be part of the community.
Right. I mean, the article points us out.
Exactly.
If you're a renter,
yeah.
you're not going to go out and paint your house.
No.
Why would you?
You're not even going to mow your lawn.
Or plant flowers or do any of the things
if you're
a renter,
if you're a renter, you might ask the owner to make repairs or to paint. I lived in a rented apartment, all my life growing up. My parents were very, very careful about the way the place looked. And if something happened, they would call up Mr. Fair.
He's the guy who owned the building?
No, he's the superintendent, Mr. Fair.
Good
we
name.
Lived to make Mr. Fair crazy, the children of the
it seems that the underlying problem, though, is what we went through in the latest fiscal crisis or the latest economic crisis of what we do, because we were giving mortgages to everybody. That didn't work out. They had home ownership. They were putting money into the houses. They were using money they didn't have, and then boom, you know. And then we see the result of that. So what do you do to help in that fabric of communities and help both renters and homeowners? And because I don't know that home ownership is always the end all and be all and works for everybody. Mm-hmm, sure. I mean, I don't think that's the answer to everybody's problems either.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the start of many a problem, I'll tell you that.
No, but I agree with Joe. I think there's a sort of a thing, of course everybody wants to own a home. No, some people come to town for a couple of years, some people move to another country, you know, and one of these days I want to do a show, I hope Joe will allow us to, on all of the new ways in which you can rent your house for a weekend or rent your couch or rent
couch
your,
surfing,
you know,
yeah.
that sort
what?
Of stuff.
Couch surfing. It's
yeah,
called.
Couch surfing.
Couch surfing?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Or you can rent your apartment for a weekend. Or,
yeah. Well, I mean, doesn't it get down to the homeowner, the owner of the apartment building? They're the ones who have to take more responsibility than they are now. Maybe that's where the pressure should be put. I don't know. I would think that if I were a renter, when I have rented in the past before I owned a house, I did plant gardens. I did get involved in the schools nearby. I did know the neighbors. I didn't want to annoy them by having big weeds in my lot. But,
We are just about out of time. Anybody have anything else? Anything interesting that you want to share with the group?
You have anything interesting, Ray?
Me?
Yeah. No?
All right.
This sounds like filler.
No, it isn't. I thought
this is what when I say to my students, write one page, and they're saying, well, what if I don't have anything to say?
Yeah. Yeah. They say, what I did on my trip to Spain, I believe.
Ray is making fun of me.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are, because it's the essay I always answered every question with. I took my mother on a trip to Spain. I took my umbrella on a trip to Spain.
You know, there is an interesting this will be a story that we'll bring up tomorrow. We'll tease it a little bit, but there is a there now, of course, we've seen all of the states come up with different laws saying don't text while you drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is now a state that is putting in legislation that says that if you receive a text from someone that you know is driving, then you will also be responsible.
That is ridiculous.
Cool.
Yeah. That is absolutely ridiculous.
I knew I could fire him up.
How do you enforce that?
meaning that so if you hit send and then you deliver it in to your box and look at it, you are as responsible as
they
are. Yeah,
but how would you know the guy was driving?
Hmm?
How if I send something to Rosemary and she
that is
to be
a
driving.
Great question. Yeah. And we'll bring that up.
What time are you driving home?
Tomorrow.
I want to try that. Let's experiment.
Yeah, let's do that.
We'll see what happens.
Sounds like a good question.
Yeah, it's in New Jersey.
Oh,
all right.
No wonder.
You're listening. We'll get back. We'll have another conversation tomorrow. Rosemary won't be with us, but we'll see her on Monday.
Exactly.
Terrific. We'll be here tomorrow.
Monday. Do we have a Monday?
We don't have Monday. We'll be Tuesday.
Okay. Tuesday.
See you then. All right. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.